Hey friends, before you start listening to this episode, just a quick note. I used the wrong microphone setting when I went to record this interview with Mary. So you'll notice the audio on my end isn't as great as it normally is. So please accept my sincere apologies. It'll be back to normal in the next episode. Technology is hard, but I think you're still going to get a ton out of this interview. Mary is amazing. So enjoy.
Hey friends, welcome back to the Old Fashioned on Purpose podcast. This is the show where we look at what we have lost as we have raced towards progress as a culture and how we can get all of the good stuff back into our modern lives. I'm your host, Jill Winger. I've been living out here on the Wyoming prairie for almost 15 years, learning these old fashioned skills and now teaching these old fashioned skills. And I'd say one of the very first things I ever tried, that I was really passionate about getting it right when I started to cook more homestead style, was whole wheat bread, specifically whole wheat sourdough bread. And like many of you, I kind of view that as the ultimate because it's like as close to the original form as possible, right? You just take the wheat bear, you grind it up, and you use it in your bread with wild yeast. And it sounds romantic and perfect. And I mean, there's really nothing that encapsulates this idea of heritage cooking better than that. But as many of you probably already know from your own experimentations, the idea of mixing a whole wheat flour with sourdough is not as easy as I would like it to be. And it stumped me for years and years because I'm like, how can this be so difficult? Why does the processed factory flour work better than the original flour? And honestly, it just annoyed me and to the point where I gave up on it for quite a while. So I've come back to it. I've talked about it a little on the podcast. I've had some success, but sometimes I feel like that success is a little bit up and down. So I was so excited when I got an email from Mary of the Rose Homestead in my inbox a couple weeks ago. This is her passion. She has experimented with this a ton. She has so much good information on this topic, and we get to dive into it today. So if you have struggled with whole wheat sourdough, maybe you've given up in frustration, you have got to listen to this episode. So welcome, Mary.
Thank you so much for having me today, Jill.
I am thrilled for this conversation. Can you give us just a little bit of background on you and your homestead and kind of how you got into this bread niche, if you will?
Sure. My husband, Casey, and I live on a tiny little homestead in our homestead in Virginia. And I quit my job about 16 years ago and became a homemaker. And the first thing I wanted to learn was how to bake bread. And I just made regular bread with yeast, all-purpose flour. And I got a little bored because I kind of figured that out after a while. And so I decided to jump on the sourdough trade. And that took a little while. And after I learned that, I was watching a video, I think, on YouTube. This lady was talking about freshly milled flour. And I got so excited because of what she was saying, the health benefits and the taste and all that. And so I bought some wheat berries. And to be honest, I haven't looked back. I've been making sourdough with freshly milled flour now for quite a while. And I, like you, at first, it was, I would have a success, I would have a failure. I would have a success, I would have a failure. And it took like probably a good year or two to say, what is causing the successes and what's causing the failures? And I have finally found some tips to make it a lot easier if you're having those types of problems too.
Yes, definitely ups and downs. It's a roller coaster. So let's just dive in kind of high level, and then we can get into some of the nitty gritty logistics. But why is it so much harder? Because it, to me, you know, I'm like, this doesn't make sense. Why would it be harder to bake with flour in the original form versus the factory industrial version?
Sure. I think that a lot of it has to do with freshly milled flour has the germ and the bran intact. And those are kind of like shards. When you try to make bread with them, they cut, the gluten is hard to develop, the structure is hard to develop. And it seems like that the flour absorbs water so much differently than the store-bought flour. I've always looked at it like store-bought flour is almost like a powder. I never get that consistency with a grain meal. And so they're doing something pretty industrial to get that flour that fine. And so when you first start working with freshly milled flour, it's got some texture to it. And that really hinders the baking process, even if it's not sourdough. Just baking a yeast loaf with freshly milled flour can be challenging. And I do believe, though, that it's just the germ and the bran. They're rough and there's a little few things you have to adjust so that you can soften those to make it a little more like, I say, you know, you need to adjust your expectations with freshly milled flour. It's not ever going to be like all-purpose flour, but you can have some wonderful, wonderful loaves of bread if you just do a few little things to adjust that texture problem.
So I definitely want to get into those particular things, but just to play devil's advocate for a moment, let's say someone's listening and they're like, okay, so if it's never going to be exactly the same and I have to take these considerations, why bother? Why not just stick with the all-purpose flour in bags from the store?
Absolutely. And this is where I get passionate about freshly milled flour. That you buy in the store has no nutrition. They've taken every single part out that makes bread healthy. They've taken out the vitamin E. They've taken out the vitamins, the minerals, all of the stuff. Also the flavor. When you first start using freshly milled flour, you're going to be like, wow, I've never tasted bread before because it never tasted like this before. But I would say it is worth it for the health benefits. It's worth it for the flavor. And it's also worth it because it's cost effective. I'm a frugal person and I can buy 42 pounds of wheat berries. They'll last for years and years. I only grind what I need when I need it. And I can make a bucket last for a long time. And so for me, that's just perfect instead of using the all-purpose flour. But, you know, a lot of people, they ask me this. I had a question right before I came on here on my social media. Why would I do this? And I say, look at the health benefits, look at the flavor, and look at the cost. And usually I can convince people, sometimes not, but usually if they'll just try it, you know, they see the difference and it's worth it to them.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Okay. So speaking of wheat berries, I get this question a lot. I'm sure you do too. So I just want to address it now so people don't have to wonder throughout the episode. Where do you get your wheat berries and what's your favorite type of wheat berry to use? I mean, I'm sure you try lots of different things, but do you have like a standard one that you reach for the most in your breads?
I am a spelt lover. We're actually growing spelt this year because I love it so much. But to be honest with you, when I am trying to convince someone to use freshly milled flour, I will more than likely steer them towards hard white wheat because it's the closest thing to all-purpose flour that you're going to get in a freshly milled flour. I like to purchase 42-pound buckets from Pleasant Hill Grains. It's the ancient grains variety. They're very clean. I also order from breadbakers.com because they have the 42 pounds. But I like spelt. It's the easiest ancient wheat that I have found to work with. I love all of the ancient wheats. I keep them on hand, but I have found spelt just a little easier. I do love hard white wheat to mix in if I'm going to be making things like, you know, cakes or biscuits or something like that. But spelt's pretty much what I reach for most of the time.
Awesome. And I know that, now correct me if I'm wrong, the gluten is different in spelt. Is it less gluten or just like a weaker or different gluten?
It's a weaker type of gluten. It takes a little more time to build some structure and to let the gluten develop. But I find if you just have a little patience with spelt, it's a lovely grain to work with. You just have to have just a little bit of patience with it, which when we're doing sourdough, we're patient anyway. So, you know, it's just kind of par for the course.
Definitely. Now, so when you say with patience and time, is that something you would do more kneading or just more waiting in your fermentation or your rise times?
To be honest, I have found with freshly milled flour that it's kind of both. I have found that the more I knead it, the better the results. And the longer I let it soak, just the flour and the water, the better results that I get. So I do at least 30 minutes autolyse. And then I knead for probably 10 to sometimes 15 minutes. I mean, on corn, you can't do that. You'll have a soupy mess before it's over. But I have found that with spelt, I can knead it for a good 10 minutes before, you know, I start going on the downward spiral. And I use a Bosch mixer, so it's really kneading it hard, and it turns out perfect. Now, I find if you don't knead it long enough or stretch and fold extra, that bread will overproof faster than anything. I have just noticed that. It gets dimply. It gets harder to work with. But if I knead it for at least 10 minutes, I can let it go for a lot longer. And that's been my experience for the past several years with spelt in particular.
That is fascinating. I think I had the understanding. I don't know where I got it, why I thought this, that I needed to knead it less. Maybe I was thinking that the bran wouldn't cut the gluten as much if I kneaded it less, but potentially that was causing me more problems in the long run, maybe. So maybe I just need to be kneading a little bit more.
I think that what happens is that if you will soak the flour in the water, that will soften the bran and the germ, then your kneading does more. Now, like I said, with einkorn, throw all that out the window. You cannot work it. But with kamut and spelt, I find that I can knead just as long as I do with hard white wheat, hard red wheat, and I get fantastic results every single time.
Okay.
Fascinating. I knew I was going to learn a ton. I was even going to bake some bread yesterday, and I'm like, I'm going to wait till I talk to Mary because I thought I feel so inspired after our conversation. Okay, so we have our wheat berries. Thank you for those resources, by the way. Hill Grains, that's a website? Hill Grains, like
Pleasant. Pleasant Hill Grains.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
It's on.
And then Red Becker's. Okay. I also know some folks have Azure Standard accessibility, so that's another option. So what type of grain mill do you like to use?
I have a few because I have a problem.
Stop at any time, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. I have two Nutri-Mill grain mills. I have the Classic, and they actually sent me the Harvest about 6-8 months ago, and I fell in love with it. I use that one all the time now. I also have a Wonder Mill, and I don't use it that often, but it was kind of one of those backup things in case my Classic broke down. But then I got sent the Harvest, and I just use it all the time. I love the flexibility with the Harvest because you can crack grains or you can make a fine flour. And with the Classic, it's pretty much fine flour. That's all you can do with that one. So I do love the Harvest. I would recommend, if you're tight on a budget, though, get the Classic. It's a lot cheaper, and it still does the trick.
I also have the Harvest, and I've also had the Classic in the past. So it's fun that we're grain mill twins. With your Harvest, I know there is like such a variability on turning it. It took me a while to get that feel. Are you going as fine as you can go, or are you kind of in the middle? Where do you like the coarseness to be?
Yeah, it depends on what I'm baking. If I'm making biscuits, I go as fine as possible. If I'm going for bread, I know you'll understand this, having the Harvest. I go to about 7-8 o'clock.
Yep.
That's what I use. But now for pastries or cakes, I twist it. I mean, you can smell that the stones are touching each other. I don't recommend doing that for all of your flour because it can kind of gum up the stones. I've never had it happen, actually, but I've heard people say that it can happen. So I go with 7-8 o'clock for most of my bread products, and that works out perfect.
Okay, that makes sense. Awesome. Are you grinding as you go, like in small batches? Do you like grind once a week or store it? What's your method there?
I have the unpopular opinion that it's not good to grind once a week and store it. It starts losing nutrition pretty quickly after you grind it. So I have a little scale that I go by. 2/3 cup of wheat berries is a cup of flour. And so I just go by that and I look at my recipe and I say, I need 3 cups of flour. I grind up this many wheat berries and I don't even measure it. I just know I have that many cups of flour and I just pour it in my bowl and go with it that way. But, you know, if you are the type of person, I have to grind. I don't have time to do this. Put it in your freezer. It will slow the process of the deterioration down quite a bit. And I do keep a little bit of flour in my freezer for when I'm lazy and I'm just making muffins or something, you know. Sure. So, I mean, I'm not a hardcore person. I'm kind of, you know, I don't have to have it just right. But if I have time, I would rather just grind as I go for the health benefits.
Absolutely. I'm kind of the same way. And that's what the one thing I do like about the Harvest is it's, and this episode is actually not sponsored by Nutri-Mill. I'm just saying I just simply like the machines. It fits under my counters better because I had to put my Classic in a cupboard and then pull it out. And now I just have the Harvest sitting out all the time and I just go grind a little bit and then use it. And it just feels like a good rhythm for me. So, yeah.
I'm interrupting this episode for just a second to tell you about a homesteading event that may be near you. And if it is, you definitely gotta go. It's the second annual Modern Homestead Conference in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And before I tell you more, I have some good news and some bad news. The bad news is that I can't attend, and I am so bummed. I just couldn't make the dates work this year. But the good news is there are a ton of other amazing speakers and experts that you are going to learn so much from. Joel Salatin will be there, Lisa from Farmhouse on Boone, she's been here on my podcast, Homesteading Family, Sally Fallon, Jess from Roots and Refuge, and tons more. They'll also have Dr. Temple Grandin doing a very special talk this year. I got to see her last year, and she was amazing. So this two-day event features presentations for both beginner and advanced homesteaders. There's topics like food preservation, seed saving, animal husbandry and processing, fire and homestead preparedness, herbalism, how to build a strong community, and that is just scratching the surface. So if you've never attended an event like this, trust me, it's really worth it to make some time and go. You're going to see these things in real life, in person, which will fast track your learning so much more. Plus, there's just nothing like getting to rub shoulders with people who are like-minded and doing all the weird and crazy things that you and I like to do. So get your tickets now. They're still for sale, and you can grab them over at modernhomesteading.com.
Okay, so we have our grinder, we have our wheat berries. Let's get into the process. So I feel like I definitely just want to talk about whole wheat flour in general. I know you said you have some different tips, but then I'd also, once we kind of cover that, I'd like to get into the sourdough specifics. Because like you mentioned earlier, it's tricky enough to use whole wheat flour with regular yeast. Then you add the sourdough variable that adds a whole layer of complexity. So can we just start with how it might operate different with absorption and things like that?
Sure. I think that freshly milled flour absorbs water pretty slow. So when you mix your flour and water, what you have at that moment will change. So I have people all the time, they say, I have this dense block when I made bread with freshly milled flour. Well, that's because they kept adding flour until they got it to what they thought it should be. But with freshly milled flour, what you want to do is air on a stickier dough right at first and knead it. It will come together. I've actually done video after video proving to people because they just feel like I have to add more flour. And so I took a view of my mixer and I was like, this is what you want it to be. And after 10 minutes, I came back and it had come together in a beautiful, soft, stretchy dough. But what happens is if you try to make it work right away with freshly milled flour, it makes a horrible, dense, dry loaf of bread. And I find that even with all-purpose flour, people add too much flour, I think, to their breads. Yep. But I do feel like that you do want to do an autolyse. And a lot of people may look at that and say, well, that's just an extra 30 minutes. But I promise you, if you will give yourself 30 minutes, your bread turns out so much better. It's softer. You get a better rise. It just turns out better all around. So my hugest tip with freshly milled flour is soak that. The bran and germ is going to be awful if you just try to go straight into kneading or doing your, you know, regular routine. Not to say you can't get a good loaf like that. Sometimes I skip it. Like I said, I'm not a hardcore person. Sometimes I just go straight into it. It still turns out. But if I take the time to do it the right way, it turns out even better.
Can you explain briefly what autolyse is, just in case someone isn't familiar with that term?
Absolutely. You take the flour that your recipe calls for and the water, and you mix them together, cover it, and just leave it sit. What's going to happen during that process is the flour is going to absorb the water. The bran and the germ are going to soften so that they're not working against you in your kneading and your rise and building structure and stuff like that. And you're going to end up with a softer dough all around. And plus, you're going to see where you really are with your dough, because when you first mix it, you're going to say, oh, that's so wet. When you come back 30 minutes later, you're going to say, oh, okay, it's not. It's actually come together now. And that is one of the biggest hurdles I had when I first started using freshly milled flour. I was under the impression I could just make my favorite recipe with freshly milled flour, just like I did with all purpose. And they were awful. and the chickens ate them. And so that's what we do if we have chickens. But okay. It was one of those things. I was like, there has to be a better way. We're dealing with flour here. Flour, water, salt, yeast. Ma Ingalls did not, waste all this bread,
Yep.
So there has to be a way to get it to work. And I find that soaking is the number one thing that you need to do to make sure that your dough is soft and pliable, and it will rise better and be softer all the way around. But that's just the first thing I learned about freshly milled flour.
It makes a ton of sense too. And yeah, simple enough, but important. Are you weighing or measuring? Which camp do you follow? That's a controversial question.
I am Ma Ingalls over here on the homestead. I don't think she pulled out a kitchen scale and was measuring everything.
Yep.
I am old school. I am simple. That's a lot of the feedback I get from my subscribers and on the website is thank you for not pulling the scale out. I have found that I'm like, it is controversial. I never even knew the scale was a thing when I first started baking. And I do have one. I don't use it, but I do have one because when I first started sourdough, oddly enough, I thought I had to have one because that was what all the people were saying. And what I found out was, no, you don't have to have one. You can just do it yourself. You don't have to have fancy equipment to make sourdough bread. Like I said, Ma Ingalls had an old wood cook stove. She had her sourdough starter. She had her flour, water, salt, and she made bread. She didn't have a Bosch mixer. She didn't have any of this stuff. And somehow she made her daily bread for her family. And so I definitely fall into the camp, no fancy equipment. Let's make this easy. My motto is make sourdough simple. It doesn't have to be so complicated.
I am right with you. And yeah, I have seen many examples of the complication. And I think it's for the folks, what I figure at least, it's for the folks who want to go to that artisan bakery realm. But I'm like, I think if you just start simple, like you said, you're going to develop the feel and just that intuition that will eventually get your loaves to that point. But you just don't have to necessarily start with the insane complication.
Exactly. I agree.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad we got that off the table. We're in agreement on the, I have played with weighing, but for the most part, like I'm always reaching for the measuring cups. Like I'm like eyeballing it. When I feed my sourdough, I rarely measure anything. It has a feel. I'm like, I want this consistency and I know what I like and off we go and it works. Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we have our Autolyse. We're waiting for that absorption. What comes next with your process?
That's when I do, like, I call it heavy kneading. And I let it knead for 10 to 12 minutes. That's a long time. A lot of people say, that's crazy that it's over kneaded. I have never in my entire life over kneaded bread, especially if doing it by hand. I'll fall over first. There's no way you can over knead bread with your hands. But now with a KitchenAid mixer, it's going to take much longer. Because these Bosch mixers, Akershum mixers, they're completely different beasts than the KitchenAid mixer. So I know that the Farmers on Boone channel, she talks about kneading her bread in a KitchenAid for like 20, 25 minutes, and it doesn't over knead. So I would lose the fear of over kneading altogether and knead it until it is soft and it's glossy and it's got this wonderful texture. There's like a test you can do that a lot of people talk about, the window pane test. I don't do that. I don't know. I don't want to follow the rules or whatever. Yeah, but
I like
it. I feel of it though. And if it stretches without breaking, then I'm good to go. And there is a point where you don't even have to do that. You can just tell by looking at it. It's beautiful, it's glossy, it's soft. And if you get it to that point, you're good to go. Now, a lot of people stretch and fold, which is kind of like the kneading process in a slower capacity. I do that if I'm making artisan bread. Do more. And you're looking for the same thing. It's just going to take a few more hours to do it that way. But you're still looking for the glossy, soft, stretchy dough. Once you reach that, you don't have to stretch and fold anymore. Now, I don't do any fancy stretch and folding. Like, I've seen some really fancy stuff go on with the, working the dough with sourdough. But I do just pull it up and stretch it over, pull it up, stretch it over 3 or 4 times around the bowl. And I will do that until I don't have a set amount of stretch of bolts. I just do it until the dough feels the way I want it to feel. And then I start letting it rise before I put it in the Bannetton basket, which that's another thing that I'm a rebel on. I don't always do this. A lot of times I just knead it, put it in a Bannetton basket and let it rise and bake it. So it's like a same day artisan bread. Oh, okay. And it turns out just as good as the hours long thing that you could do. And I envision in my mind that that's what they did back in the pioneer days. I don't think they had all these different rises and different. I think they did whatever was the quickest. Maybe that's just me being, you know, over logical with bread. But I just like to do the simplest process and not overthink it. There's a lot of overthinking going on with sourdough and with freshly milled flour that we need to put a stop to it because bread is so simple. If we just, you know, do the basics, don't do anything fancy at first. You can if you want, once you get the hang of it. But I have found with my personal experience, I've been doing this for years and I still do what's easy, what's simple and quick. And it works for me. So, but you know, you don't have to do what I say. But if you want it to be quick, just don't do all that fancy stuff.
Yeah. So, okay. You said a couple good things. I want to backtrack a little bit. So I know a lot of recipes, especially like you said, now it's kind of trendy to do the stretch and fold. And just for someone kind of following along and is new to the process, correct me if I'm wrong, the stretch and fold is also developing the gluten like kneading wood. It just takes longer. And it's just a different style. Is that
a correct
observation? Okay.
It's the same thing. Kneading does it in 10 minutes. Stretching a fold does it over a few hours. So you can stretch and fold every 5 minutes if you want to. And it's just going to work. You're building structure. What gives like oven spring that we hear people talk about is a good structure. So you're building up the gluten. And if you don't, you'll get that loaf and put it on the parchment paper and it goes... It just loses steam, you know, and we've all had that happen. So I tell people all the time, no shame. We all have that. I still have that happen from time to time. But the more care you take to build the gluten and the structure, the less likely that that's going to happen when you do your baking. And yeah, stretch and fold. I personally don't do stretch and folds hardly ever. I'm a knead it and done. Put it in the bowl, let it rise and just be done with it. But, you know, stretching and folding works the same way. It's just, I'm the type of person, I'll forget. I'll put a bowl there with my dough in it. And like an hour later, I'm like, oh, I forgot about this dough. And so I just tend to knead it to be done with it. So that's just my experience.
I'm the same way with stretch and fold. I like the idea, but it'll say, you know, do 4 sets of it over 30 minutes. And so I'm like, okay, so I do the first set and then I wander off and forget it exists. Until it's too late.
Exactly.
It's hard to remember unless I'm just standing there in the kitchen staring at it, which of course I'm
so. Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And so then on the rise time, you said, I mean, like a lot of recipes will tell you to do the bulk rise and then you reshape and put it in your Bannetton and you rise again. You're saying sometimes you just rise right in the Bannetton. What are you looking at, especially for a sourdough bread? How long is that rise period for you?
So it so depends on your starter. If you have a young, immature starter, it takes what seems like eons to rise in there. But if you have a really established, mature starter, in the summer, I'll be ready to bake in 4 hours. So, but that's my starter. I have people tell me it's been 24 hours and it's barely rising. It gets better. Just keep trying. It gets better with time. But a well-established starter, I would say 4 hours, 4 to 6 hours. Now, if you have gluten sensitivities, wheat sensitivities, you're going to want to put that in the fridge and let it ferment longer because you need a long fermentation to break down the gluten structure more so that your tummy doesn't get upset when you eat it. And like I said on a video earlier, I'm not talking about celiac patients. I'm talking about just people who, you know, have issues when they eat it. You may not get by with a 4-hour rise time. You may need to put it in the fridge and let it go for like up to 24 hours in the fridge, just to make sure that you get all those benefits of the fermentation process. I just do mine for like 4 hours and it turns out, but there are a lot of people who have these sensitivities now to bread and letting it go a little bit longer, 8 to 24 hours is really ideal for somebody who complains that they have problems eating sourdough. I got off topic, but I'm sorry.
No, that's a great point. And I did want to talk about the pledge, because I have followed a number of different recipes. I'm kind of like you. I get bored with one and I have to go experiment and mess it all up and try it again. But some will call for an extended time in the refrigerator. And I've always struggled, unless it's already risen and I'm just kind of holding it in the fridge till I can bake it, I have a really hard time getting a solid rise from start to finish in the fridge. Do you think it's just maybe my starter isn't strong enough? Like, I'm like, does anyone actually get this to work? Because I've always struggled with that.
I'm with you. I can't just make a recipe and put it in the fridge and it's going to rise. I have a really super active starter. I do part of my rise on the counter. And when I can see that fermentation, the signs, which would be puffiness and airiness, then I put it in the fridge and let it slow things down. And then I can get a good oven spring and a good rise. But I cannot just put it in the fridge. I've seen people do that. Oh, just put it in the fridge and it's fine. And they must have like atomic starters, because mine has never, ever done that before. So my recipes, usually I'll say, let it rise and then put it in the fridge and let it do a really slow fermentation for several hours. And that seems to work well for just breaking down that gluten. I don't want to say breaking down gluten, because it makes it sound like gluten goes away. It doesn't go away.
Correct.
It just changes that structure enough that when we eat it, it doesn't bother us. But the good news is, with ancient wheat, you don't have to worry about that, because it's already way better, you know, for you. So you can do the 4 hours if you want and have a quick sourdough. But that's, I've never been able to get away with quick sourdough or sourdough rising in the fridge. Never. Never.
Thank you for saying that. I feel better, because I'm like, what is wrong with me? Like, the fridge is like my nemesis, but that makes me feel better. So thank you for that. Sometimes I get people asking me about sourness. They're concerned about too sour. And I've noticed sometimes with my wheat breads, they have a tendency to can get really sour. How do you mitigate that, or how do you kind of control that?
So my tips for sourness are, it's temperature. That is what causes sourness. So the colder and longer that you ferment your sourdough bread, the way more sour it's going to get. The quicker and warmer, so say you have a proofing box or your house is really warm, like ours in the summer gets really warm and it proofs super fast. You can't even tell that it's sourdough. It doesn't even have the flavor of sourdough if you do a quick rise. But for me, I tell people, if you don't want sour, purchase a proofing box. I bought one for like $20 on Amazon. It works like a charm. It's just a little cooler looking thing with a heat mat in it. If you let that proof really fast, you're not going to get the sourness. If you want a really sourdough or sour loaf, let it proof some, put it in the fridge, let it go for, say, I have had people say they left it for a week in the refrigerator and then bake it. And that's a super, super sour loaf of bread. I don't prefer that myself, but that's what you're looking for. Cold and slow is what's going to get you that. I've had people say that it's the starter that causes it to be either sour or not. I've not had that in my experience. I can control the flavor of my sourdough pretty easily just by the temperature and how fast that I ferment it. But, you know, like I said, if you're going to leave it for a week, you have to, you know, be prepared that it's going to like be like a lemon when you bite into it. But that's what some people are asking me for. They want it to be super, super like citric acid sour. And that's exactly how you're going to get that. Just leave it for a week and then bake it. You'll get what you're looking for. And if you don't want that, then just proof it quicker and then you won't have that. So
that makes sense. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, that's a good tip. I like the proofing box tip too. I don't have one, but that would be good if you had a chilly house. Sometimes I do, actually. So I know you mentioned at the beginning, like, you can't always expect your whole wheat bread to be exactly like all-purpose flour, which is fair. One area that I've noticed, I never quite get it the same as all-purpose, it would be just with the amount of rise. So I've noticed whether it's an artisan loaf or a loaf pan loaf, they're always just a little bit smaller, shorter. Do you have any tips for that, or is that just something we need to accept?
I get amazing rises on my whole wheat sourdough bread, but it's only because of the kneading that I was talking about.
Yes.
The longer I knead it, the better the rise. I found out before I started doing the kneading trick that I didn't get very good rises ever with my whole grain sourdough bread. They would be like, you know, like this when they came out of the oven. And it took me a long time. No one was talking about it. It's not that big of a topic, it seems. Most people are doing all-purpose sourdough. You don't hear a lot of people talking about freshly milled sourdough. And so I didn't have a lot of places to go. I just had to kind of figure it out. But soaking it and kneading it for a long time made all the difference. I remember when it clicked. I was putting a recipe on, and I decided to soak it for a little while because my logic was telling me I need to soften up this bran and germ. And so I did that, and then I kneaded it until it got where I wanted it to be. The next morning when I got up, it was coming out of the bowl. It was a huge rise. And that was the first recipe that I ever had. And I was like, oh, okay, this is what I have to do to make freshly milled sourdough rise and get a really good oven spraying. And ever since I started doing that, I've perfect rises every time. Now, we have a wood burning stove. That's all we have. And in the winter, I'll be honest with you, before my proofing box, it wasn't that easy. I would sit it by the stove and then it would get too warm. And then I'd have to, it was like a trick. You would have to move it here, move it there. In the winter, I'll be honest, it's hard with sourdough in general if you have a cold house. So it's just one of those things that the kneading and the soaking, I'm telling you, if you try it, it makes all the difference with your freshly milled sourdough. You will start seeing the results that you hoped you would see, but you weren't seeing. When I first started using freshly milled flour in sourdough, I was so disappointed because it just didn't work. And after I started doing this, I can use almost any flour. I can make an all einkorn, freshly milled einkorn sourdough loaf that has really good oven spraying, but it's just about, you know, following a few little tips, takes a few extra minutes, but it's worth it. It makes beautiful loaves that way.
I definitely think I've been under kneading for a long time. So now I'm going to go try it. I'm really excited. Speaking of einkorn, what do you do differently? Because that is like the ultimate, you know, freshly milled einkorn with sourdough. How would that differ from your freshly milled regular wheat?
It's a whole different process. With freshly milled einkorn, I use a levain or levain, ever how you want to pronounce it. I make one overnight using some flour, water, and a little bit of sourdough starter. I let that ferment overnight. What that does, you'll get a quicker fermentation and a softer loaf of bread. So it helps with the rise because it softens everything. I don't need einkorn when I'm making sourdough bread. I just do some, I guess it's not really stretching fold. What I do is I take the dough and I roll it out and I just fold it back on top of itself four times, put it back in the bowl. I take it out, I roll it out. And what happens is when you're rolling it out and pulling it back, it's kind of like stretching and folding, but einkorn can't take that. It just breaks in pieces. Yeah. So if you just roll it out, I learned that technique from watching, Jovial website. They had a YouTube channel and Carla was showing how to make einkorn bread. And this was her method for stretching and folding einkorn bread. And it works. I did that as many times as I needed to get a soft dough. And then I just let it rise, put it in the Bannerton basket after that for like an hour and made the most beautiful loaf of einkorn sourdough bread. But you just have to treat it different. You have to look at einkorn. It has a very weak gluten structure, the weakest of all of the ancient wheats. And it's really hard to adjust. I have people tell me all the time, can you please show me how to make einkorn bread? Einkorn bread is tricky. It is. And I always suggest learn how to use the other flours first. Learn how to use to just make sourdough alone first. And then as you feel like, I'm confident, I know what I'm doing, I know how dough is supposed to feel, then start adding einkorn in. Because Even now, I don't choose to work with it that often because it is a little petty to work with. And, you know, it's nice for pancakes and muffins and things like that. But I rarely use it to make my bread. It's just too kind of, I'm just not that type of person to sit and fuss with it that long. And so I just don't mess with it as often as I probably should because it is really good for you.
Yes. I'm the same way. I like it. I notice it makes great pasta, just a one-to-one. You can treat it like regular old flour or muffins or whatever, but the bread's pretty tricky. So I'm in the same boat as you with that.
I think too that I have a lot of people ask me about ancient wheat. I always say try spelt because it is the easiest to work with. And when you mill it, it's very similar to hard white wheat. It's a lot fluffy flour that mixes up fairly similar to a hard white wheat, and I can get really good rises out of it. Kamut, I use for pasta. It makes, you were saying, Einkorn. I've never made Einkorn pasta, but Kamut makes an amazing pasta. And I think that Einkorn is just, it will really discourage you if you start out with it. I'm just going to be honest. If that's your first pick, you're probably going to walk away from bread baking because it is, it's hard. And, but once you get the hang of it, if you have a little bit of extra time, then you can, you know, you can jump into the Einkorn bread thing. I go for whatever's quick in my kitchen. And so I stick with what's easy.
I really see bread baking so much on just kind of a ladder, a hierarchy of, you know, I always tell people start off with all purpose. If you've never touched bread in your life, start with that. And then you can get into whole wheat and you can get into whole wheat sourdough. And then Einkorn's kind of like way down the ladder. But I think those steps are so important. Otherwise, you do get discouraged really easily.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we don't want you getting discouraged. Yeah, we want you to be baking bread. Yes, exactly.
Yep. Can you speak a little bit to maintaining a sourdough starter with freshly milled flour? And like if someone had an all-purpose starter now, how they could potentially transition it or if they should transition it, how you kind of think through that?
So I've had several sourdough starters because I like making sourdough starters for whatever reason with different flours. My sourdough starter right now started as a freshly milled spelt sourdough starter. Since then, it has had freshly milled Kamut. I fed it freshly milled Einkorn this morning. I've done all-purpose Kamut. I kind of made this one an ancient wheat sourdough starter. I'm not on purpose, but that's just what I've been feeding it. Sourdough starter with ancient wheat, to me, I haven't noticed that it's any different, or with freshly milled flour, that it's any different than with all-purpose flour, because it's really just about feeding the yeast and bacteria that's in there. It's going to feed off of rye. It's going to feed off of hard white, all-purpose bread flour, ancient wheat. I mean, you name it. It's looking for the starch and in the flour. That's all it wants. And so I have transitioned many starters from all-purpose to Einkorn to spelt to hard white wheat to just whatever, rye. And I haven't noticed this big difference in how it performs, or it may look a little different. I have had people call me out even on YouTube and say, that starter looks like it had all-purpose flour. Well, I use all-purpose Kamut a lot in my kitchen. I'm like, you caught me. I used all-purpose Kamut. But it's not that I'm not like a stickler. Like I have to feed my starter freshly milled flour. I just don't. I like to do that because that's what I have on hand most of the time is freshly milled flour. But an all-purpose Kamut flour is a really good, high-quality, ancient wheat flour that I'm not afraid to use in my kitchen as well. I just don't use it that often because it doesn't really have any flavor. It's just all-purpose flour. Yeah. But yeah, I would say transitioning a starter, just feed it something different. No joke. It'll still work exactly the same.
I'm glad you said that. I have, because I've seen the recommendations where it's like you do 25% this day and 50%. And I'm like, okay, maybe that's what I'm supposed to do. But I usually do the same thing. I'm like, oh, look, I have extra freshly milled flour. In you go. Oh, today I only have all purpose. In you go. I'm like, is this horrible? Because it seems to be working. But I think you and I are very much kindred spirits in how we operate.
It seems like, yes.
No nonsense. That's how we roll. Yeah.
Yeah, simple, no nonsense. I don't overthink anything in my kitchen.
No. Nope.
I don't have time. I got too much going on, you know. But I've had people say, no, you're not supposed to, they'll actually comment and say, you're not supposed to do this. And I say, well, maybe not, but it works. Yep. So I'm fine with it. But I have been called a rebel. I've been called, called out. I usually I preface every video almost that I'm not a sourdough purist. I am not a sourdough stickler. I use yeast in my kitchen. Okay. Yeah. But as far as sourdough goes, I just enjoy the process. It's like a science experiment. Every time you put on your dough to watch it, and you have this experience that they had thousands of years up until like the early 1900s when they came up with the yeast and things like that. You get to have that experience, and that's what I look for in my kitchen, is cooking and baking in the way that they would have all those years ago. And just see what it felt like. It kind of makes you feel good, you know?
It really does. I mean, I also use yeast. I'm also not a purist, but there is something, it just is, you know, it's more interesting. And I'm all about the interest and the curiosity in the kitchen just as much as the food. And I think, yeah, like you said, that's why sourdough is so intriguing, because it's always a little different. It's an art as much as a science. And it just feels right. It just feels primal and back to the basics, and it just feels right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that in the kitchen, if you're doing like from scratch cooking, that's what I do. I make everything from scratch. I'm not saying that I'm perfect in the kitchen, so I don't want to make it sound like that. But I prefer to take raw ingredients and somehow come up with things that I could buy at the store. That's kind of my challenge in life, you know. And sourdough's like that. Sourdough is flour and water. That's all it is. And you don't have to buy yeast. I mean, I do buy yeast, but you wouldn't have to. You could survive and make your bread with sourdough as long as you have flour and water. And I just like the thought of that. It's cost effective, really. You don't have to buy yeast. So
Exactly. All right. So holy moly, we have flown through our time. We covered a lot of ground. Is there anything we missed? Any last tips or thoughts or things we didn't cover that you think would be useful for someone listening?
Well, I made a couple of notes. The first one is as milling your wheat for texture. We kind of touched on that. Mm-hmm. But I think that it's important to learn your meal. When I first got my harvest meal, my flour was very coarse because I didn't really understand how to adjust it for texture. That will make not so great loaves of bread. So I say if you get the harvest grain meal, especially, play with it with just a handful of rice just to learn the texture control, because I kind of messed up with that. And you want to mill bread flour, doesn't need to be like powder, but you do want it to be a finer flour so that you get a lighter area loaf, because you're using freshly milled flour. It's going to be on the denser side anyway, but if you make it a finer flour, it will be an area loaf of bread. And one other thing was that I wanted to convince people that freshly milled sourdough bread is like a super bread. It is amazing. I hear people talk all the time, sourdough makes the vitamins and minerals more bioavailable. And all-purpose flour really doesn't have vitamins and minerals in it. So to make sourdough the most healthy, you need to use flour that's full of vitamins and minerals. So by making them more bioavailable, you actually get them. And so I'm here to advocate, try sourdough with freshly milled bread. It will be a game changer. Health-wise, it's just easier on your system. You get more vitamins and minerals than with all-purpose flour. And the taste is so much better. I get the question all the time, is it really worth it? What you do, you know, in your kitchen, all this work that you do. I don't really look at it as work. I look at it as investing in my health and investing, yes, you know, in our health. And so I just want to encourage listeners, please don't, you know, negate that freshly milled flour is going to be hard to work with. I mean, it is going to be, but it is so worth the effort. And if you will put the time in, you will be so glad that you did it, because you can taste the health in it, but it's also delicious. I don't want people to think it tastes like cardboard. Freshly milled flour tastes amazing.
I agree. Yes. Wise words. And I am right with you. Mary, you are delightful and a wealth of knowledge. Thank you so much for sharing time with us today. I'm going to go bake some bread this afternoon. Can you tell folks where to find you online? Because I think you mentioned you have a YouTube channel. I know you have some awesome recipes on your website. Where can they get closer to you?
Sure. Our website is therosehomestead.com. I have tons of sourdough recipes, and they are made with freshly milled flour. I also tell you in the recipe that you can use all-purpose flour if you want. And we have a YouTube channel, The Rose Homestead, where we share homesteading, cooking from scratch, sourdough recipes, and all the stuff, as you know, that goes on at in a homestead. And I'm also on Instagram, the_rose_homestead, and Facebook, The Rose Homestead. So check us out.
Excellent. Folks, definitely go follow Mary. I'm going to go look at her recipes again. I was already clicking through them before we got on the interview today, but I think I'm going to go try one out because she just is no nonsense. She's simple. If you like my style of cooking, I know you're going to also enjoy Mary's style because I feel like we're on the same page for sure. So thank you again, Mary. Thank you for the inspiration and the wisdom. And yeah, I'm ready to go in the kitchen. So I think mission accomplished.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate it.